April 11th of 2019 Human Relations Commission meeting. We're going to get started even though we still need some technical things done here, but we have other business we can pursue. As you have probably noticed, our leader and friend, Rabbi Steinberg, is not here today. He is officiating at a funeral today, so he has asked me to take the chair for him today. And since he's doing God's work, we will forgive him for his absence. Next, I'd like to welcome Norma back.
Yay!
Norma, we've missed you, but we know you have a beautiful little baby. And her name is?
Evelyn.
Yeah, Evelyn. We've missed you, but we were in the good hands of Joyce and the help of Renee, and we really thank both of you for all the extra help.
My pleasure.
While Norma was gone.
My pleasure, but welcome back, Norma.
We'll have to have a little celebration.
That's okay. Just click okay.
Are you working?
No.
Somebody has to log in.
Okay, I'll ask her.
We can work around it.
You still need a login?
Yeah.
Password?
We can work around it because you guys have the presentation.
All right, then we'll move on to the next order of business, and that is to do the overview of monthly commission activities. Commissioner Fleury.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It has been a busy past month with our staff. On the summary, you have your regular meetings, the HRC meetings, the step up in activities and engagement with the community outreach relations, in terms of our two-day visits and engagements, other areas of hate crime had our staff present or be available to address issues. Police community relations. There was a meeting of the sheriff's event on March 12th, and our commissioner, Rick Steinberg, had addressed at that here the event as well in Tustin. Intergroup relations and relations building. We all know about the issues that happened in New Zealand because of the tragic situation there. And there were events over here within Orange County and elsewhere addressing that and trying to see how to prepare and better serve the communities in terms of security for the issues. Then we have outreach and presentation, the issues dealing with the Westminster High School presentation by our staff. And then we have the OCPE event on March 21st, where some of the commission staff was there at the table in attendance as well. And the Silk Road event that happened on March 31st. Then we have the crisis response, and the staff was available at Costa Mesa, Newport, U.S. East. The festival state title.
Can I just make an observation? If you look at the matrix in this report, I was out for 4 months, and there was concern about whether we were going to be able to meet our numbers because of the only having Joyce as a commission staff, not having someone to back her up, and me not being present. But if you look at these numbers, we've either met or surpassed them. And just from what we'll know, the annual awards program is in May, so we will be have fulfilled that by then. And then the only two other areas would be the PCRP cases, which we're hoping to put something in place. That was the program that had a major hit while it was gone. Everything else kind of took priority, and that one we really weren't able to do much outreach around. And then just a monthly HRC meeting. So I know we had canceled a couple meetings earlier this year due to quorum needs, but other than that, everything else was really good. So I just wanted to commend Joyce for pushing and working so hard to bring our work together and for continuing to serve the county
50%.
Yeah, a big jump.
Okay. And any questions from the commissioners? Okay. We'll move on then to the next item of business, and that is.
Are you reading?
Yeah, well, I was busy when she started, so it's fine. It's fine.
I'm running the meeting. Go ahead.
Well, the next one is for you to call for comments, which I have I have not received any.
Are there any public comments?
Okay, item number three is approved calendar of Human Relations Commission events for fiscal year 1920 to be submitted through OC Community Services to the Board of Supervisors for approval, but I just noticed right now we do not have a quorum.
We don't have a quorum for voting, so bypass the discussion on that. So we're just meeting for next meeting.
Yeah, or we can.
No, we're going to have to call special.
Okay.
Because we need them before the May meeting. So
okay.
We'll have to talk to the chair about scheduling a special.
We need some meetings. We need that vote before the next meeting.
Yeah,
we need a vote at this meeting to make the county deadlines.
Right.
So we'll have to call special.
That's what I mean.
Before.
So I'll connect with Rabbi
and
we'll try to figure out that.
Okay.
So
we can
have
the
No. Okay.
So that's
no.
It
would take years, maybe.
Okay,
let's try
this one. I tried to email, but maybe I might get two votes.
He rushed over here and didn't do any good, I'm afraid, in terms of the quorum anyway.
Okay. So we'll move to the next item. Item number four is mental health homeless liaison presentation.
And we have Jenny Lindsay. Jenny?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. From the Irvine Police Department, I've been looking forward to this one. Well, thank you.
I'm going to actually start with my partner, and the slides for the presentation are in your packet. So, unfortunately, while we try and get through training, we might be able to get this up where we can actually do a PowerPoint for you live. If not, then we'll defer to the packets. We only had one slide that was different. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to steal my partner to help on the presentation or not. We were lucky that we could kind of sneak him in. So you'll notice his contact information is not on that first slide. Also, Kevin Vaughn left. But we did pass out.
Yeah,
cards.
I think it worked.
Ooh. Yay!
That's good.
That might work.
For the record, they got their name badges finally after some time.
Did everyone get business cards? Did I miss anybody? We had a couple people trickle in. I'm going to start with my partner, Officer Kevin Vaughn Luft. He has another presentation, thank you so much, right after this. And so I'm going to let him take the floor and then I'll continue right after him.
First of all, thank you for having us and inviting us to talk about what we do. I'm a police partner for our homeless outreach program. It is very unique, and Jenny's going to really kind of dig into it. There are two of us full-time at the police department that handle our outreach program, and I think when Jenny's done with the bulk of what we do, you're going to see just how unique it is and why it's very different from what most police departments are doing around the nation for mental health outreach and the aging cat population. But with that role, two of us full-time, I also do all of our homeless outreach. And we all know that the homeless challenges in our communities right now is a very hot topic. And it's something that we're all trying to address, trying to, how do we help this population? What do we do? What's the right thing to do? And police departments, as you can see with mental health, as Jenny's gonna talk, we are the forefront of that response in the communities about this problem, especially homelessness. So with us, there really was almost every agency in Orange County now has what's traditionally kind of known right now as a homeless liaison officer, or an officer assigned to go out and contact homeless to see if we can enroll them in services. And we had to take a look at kind of what was Irvine's unique needs, and let's be honest about it, we don't face the same challenges that other cities face right now, and that's fortunate, right? We're very, very fortunate that we aren't facing some of the challenges that other cities are facing. It doesn't mean that we don't have challenges. It doesn't mean that we don't have unique needs. So our mental health program kind of rolls into what I do with the homeless, and there is a component here that is very traditional as far as that outreach. If we do run across someone in our community that is unsheltered, I go out and make contact, we build rapport, And then for us right now, it's really leaning on those community partners, county outreach and engagement services, or any nonprofits that we have locally, South County Outreach, Families Forward, Illumination Foundation, and working with them in a case management style to help them get shelter, help them get a home. But some of our unique needs that Jenny's going to dig into is really about preventing the homelessness. With our community, we see mental illness as a huge underlying issue for that homelessness. Maybe it's substance abuse, and a family might have an adult son that is suffering, and before it gets to a point where that adult son has to be put out on the street because he's not engaging in treatment, that's where our approach for our mental health outreach comes in and proactively looks at that case to try to prevent that homelessness. If he can't be home, then where can we get him? What kind of treatment can we get him into? You know, what's going to work for that family? What's going to work for him? So it's kind of a dual purpose. It's kind of a dual role as far as what I do is working with Jenny in our model of mental health outreach, but also addressing that homeless issue in our community. And when you get down to it, it's very difficult sometimes to convince someone that they need help. And really that traditional model of just building rapport with that person and going out over and over again, taking a compassionate approach, is really what is shown to be effective. And I think through our model and the way we do it, we've proven that. You know, if we can break down those barriers of why someone won't get engaged in treatment, why someone won't engage in going to a shelter, are there underlying mental health conditions, are there underlying substance abuse issues, what's going on with that person, what's that background, and it's taking that time to do that. And through that process is how we become so effective in either getting them off the street or getting enrolled in a kind of treatment program.
So what resources do you often direct them to? Are they just located in Irvine, or are you directing them to resources all over the county or even out of the county?
Wherever we can get the help. Right, yeah, so it could be very, very local Irvine, like we have South County Outreach, Families Forward, Illumination Foundation, that our offices are in our city. But when it comes to that larger problem of where can we find shelter, where can we find a treatment program, we're going to lean on that county mental health system to look at what's available, right, if they're that kind of client. Now, again, with Irvine, we're a little fortunate. We do have people in our city with a lot of resources. So it might be enrolling our other program for families, which Debbie here supervises, to help find them a private resource to use through their insurance. So, and Jenny will dig into that a little bit with some success stories that we have about how we engage both public and private resources to find that solution, right? So very case by case and so very unique to each person, right? Yes, I have insurance, but my insurance isn't qualified for this program. Okay, well, how do we get into that program then? Can we talk to that group and get scholarships? You know, we help facilitate all those conversations to our program.
Right.
So it's a multifaceted approach, and I don't want to steal Jenny's thunder because she has been doing this for 5 or 6 years, and she knows it like the back of her neck. If there aren't any specific questions about homeless, let me know. Email me, call me, get a hold of us. A couple of things that we did to try to engage the community more is we created an email address called outreach@cedarburmi.org. And what I'm using that for is just to show the community that we want to listen. I think there might be, just in general, a barrier for a community sometimes to contact the police about social services type things. What do you guys do? You guys arrest people? But no, we're here to help get those engaged in services. So that's just one small way that we want to put out to, you know, the Irvine community. Contact us. Call me. This is why I'm here. You know, I'll come out to your house. Jenny will come out to your house. We'll meet you at Starbucks. We'll meet you at your doctor's office. What do we need to do to help engage you in those services to either get you off the street and get you enrolled in treatment?
I'm sure that all of us have some questions.
Sure.
Would you prefer we ask them while you're speaking, or would you like us to wait till the end of it?
You know, I do have another presentation I got to get to for the county, so I just wanted to introduce myself and see my face, kind of hear about the homelessness issue a little bit.
Okay.
And you have my
she's gonna stick with
oh, sure.
Stop
she's
me.
Yeah.
Stop me when you have a question.
Yeah, she's got more answers than I could ever dream of. So, so she's gonna take it from here and really kind of dig into why our approach is unique on that mental health outreach. And I kind of wanted to be here just to kind of roll in for us. The homeless and the mental health outreach are kind of combined. you know, it's not just going out and saying, well, this person's in shelter and we're going to try to get them off the street. It's looking at those underlying issues of why they're homeless, how do we prevent it, you know, and talking to family, learning those things. So she's going to talk a little bit more about that. But you have my card. Please email me, call the chief, get a hold of us, whatever you need from us, from the council, from the county, we're here to help.
Thank you. Kevin, if you could just share, because I know you won't volunteer because you're modest, but your education, your background,
sure.
Beyond being a police officer.
Right, he does this to me every time.
I'll do it to Jenny also.
So a number of years, you know, when you develop in your career and you talk about like what you're good at, what you like to learn about, psychology in one of the in this field is kind of what I learned that I'm good at and what I like to talk about. So I went back and I got a master's degree in clinical psychology. So I do hold a master's degree in clinical psychology locally here from Brandon University. And then I'm currently in the middle of a doctorate program for being a doctor of psychology. So it's good. I like the learning. So and the chief always does. Yeah. So Jenny's going to take over. I'm going to run off to another presentation. It was nice meeting everybody. I really appreciate the time
to
share with you.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you again for having us. For those that came in a little later, I'm Jenny Lindsay. I'm a mental health liaison officer for the city of Irvine. And Kevin and I are the only two police officers that do this full time. And so we know that mental health and homelessness go hand in hand. You really can't separate those two. I don't think anyone who's ever worked with, spoke to, had any engagement with somebody who's homeless on the streets will really say, no, they're absolutely, completely, 100% state of mind. This is a choice they make, right? There's other things that implicate that. So I'm going to transition a little bit into the mental health aspect of our team and kind of how we started and what makes us different. And then please feel free to stop me if you have questions. There's a lot here, so I'm hoping that I'll answer everything that you have as we go. But if not, please stop me because I would much rather you get everything out of this that you want and I don't leave anything unanswered. So I always like to talk about the traditional model of psychological response teams with law enforcement because that is still really in its infancy. LAPD is really the only agency that's been doing this for a long, long time. They started a long time ago and trying to implement some of these aspects. But really, in terms of the culture of law enforcement, this is really still a new partnership, right? Pairing police officers with mental health clinicians and trying to see where we make that difference. And the most standard, if you can call it a traditional model, considering the infancy that we're in, is really looking at what we call PERT teams, which is a psychological evaluation response team. So anyone connected to the county is probably pretty familiar with that. It's usually taking a clinician from the centralized assessment team, the people that come out and facilitate whether someone goes to a hospital or not. We put that clinician into a car with the police officer, and they go to all the active crisis calls for service and try and figure out, does this person meet the criteria to be hospitalized against their will or not? If they do, they facilitate the hospitalization. If they don't, then can we come up with some sort of actionable plan to help keep them safe and maybe get them connected to some resources? That is a great program. It's well-intentioned. It has a lot of success. It just wasn't quite where we saw the biggest need for Irvine, and so ours is a little bit different. A PERT team is really going to focus on the current crisis. They're going to be call to call to call. They're really focusing on who's in trouble right now and having an episode where we need to get them help in front of a doctor. And that is fabulous, and it definitely eases some of that transition on the police officer from taking that ride to the hospital, right? It gets us into a bed a little faster. But it puts a little less pressure on the first responder, meaning the police officer. But really, we're focused in this environment on the emergency situation. We're focused on the here and now, and when you're called to call to call, because we know that a lot of these mental health calls take up the bulk of our responses now in law enforcement, and they take a long time, there's not a lot of time for follow-up and going back and doing any type of case management. So if you or I have ever had your worst day possible, regardless of what that was for you, think about how able you are to take in new information. You just can't, right? Humanly, it's just not possible. If I handed you a big stack of paperwork and said, well, here's all the resources that would fit your needs, call this number, then call that number, but maybe try this one first, but here's three therapists, but does this one take your insurance? You would tell me, stop, and that's on a normal day when you're healthy, right? So these people that are not healthy and having an episode, it's not the best time, we felt as a team, to engage, because it's not going to give them the most optimal care, and it's not going to help them get to a point where they can actually connect to the services that we know they really need. So our team has a proactive approach, but kind of in a reactive manner. And by that I mean that we are focused on wraparound services and collaboration. So we're really focused on, it takes a village. we know that we need to bring everyone to the table that touches these people, and we need to have the same consistent message, and we need to be providing the same level of care and try and omit those gaps. Because it's one thing if you go to a hospital and you get out and you can say, well, we had a PERT team that responded and helped get you into a hospital, but now what? And a lot of the clients that we talk to say, well, I wasn't completely stable when I was released from the hospital, and then I had no idea where to start. And I had all this paperwork from the county clinician, I had all this paperwork from the hospital, and it was too overwhelming, and I didn't know where to start or what any of it meant, so I just gave up. I left it. So our team really focuses on fulfilling that void. Because we work a case management style, so you have an interaction in some way or shape within our community, whether you go to a hospital or not, whether you have a conversation with an officer in passing, in a coffee shop, all that information gets funneled to our team. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in the next slide. But what we're really focused on is trying to catch them when they come back from the hospital or when we're slightly more stabilized and not in that full-blown crisis, because now you can focus on what we're really asking you to do, and it's a lot more fair to the client, it's a lot more cohesive in your treatment modality. We're really focused more on a therapeutic style because we want people to get better. And it's not fair to say we want you to get better, but we're going to set you up with everything that's going to lead you to failure, right? Yes, ma'am.
When you say a team, what do you mean by that? Now, it's a PERT team, but is team 4 or 5 people, or is it a...
I'm going to get to that
okay.
slide.
All right.
I apologize, but I want you to get a full okay. bang of this. So what we're really doing is trying to allow a broader spectrum of resources. Now, keep in mind, if you have a county clinician, which again is great for a PERT team, they can only refer you into county services. So if you have county insurance, if you have Medi-Cal or if you have Obamacare, you qualify for those county services. If you have private insurance, they can't help you. They have nothing they can offer you. And it's not to any detriment of the county. They're doing a fabulous job, but they have a very specific clientele, right? And they really can't do much outside of that because they're limited in that aspect. So we really want to design a team that, again, picked up that gap. We needed to be able to funnel in more people and touch more lives without having so many barriers. And we really work on focusing and creating a lasting relationship in the community because we're keeping you long term. We work at case management where we're going to keep you as long as we need to keep you, whether that's a week, a month, a year. Maybe we get you to a good place and 10 years later there's a relapse, we'll pick you right back up again and we maintain that case. So how do we accomplish that? This will hopefully answer that question. We have two clinicians. Irvine is very fortunate and very lucky, and we know that. We have a county clinician from the CAT team who works with us one day a week, and we're hoping soon to steal her more. And that's perfect. We don't use her in the standard PERT type of mentality, in that type of position. We really force her to look at more case management, following up on her county clients. So anyone that's been placed on a mental health hold in the city of Irvine that was facilitated by the CAT team, our county clinician Zoe will follow up on that. She's checking in to see, did they make it to their first appointment in the clinic? Were they transferred to a higher level of care? She may be coordinating directly with the county wellness coordinator that's been assigned to them, their direct social worker. Maybe we know that they're off their meds, and because they haven't shown up to the last meeting with their PACT clinician for a high level of care for somebody that may be suffering from like schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder, their assigned clinician doesn't know that, but we know because we're seeing them regularly in our city. So Zoe helps bridge that gap and really helps streamline that care for all of our clients that have county services or are going to be through those programs. Additionally, we have a program in the city of Irvine called Four Families. And like Kevin said earlier, Debbie Brunn is a supervisor for that program. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist, and she now has, working with her, a licensed clinical social worker. Now that program's been in existence for a really long time, and it's not designed to do counseling. It's really designed to be a one-stop shop for resources significant to you as an Irvine resident. There's some nexus to Irvine, and that way they can get resources for it, maybe something for domestic violence or paying an electric bill, or they don't have any medical insurance. Whatever that need is, Four Families knows the long list of different resources that they can help connect you to solve those barriers and get you onto the next successful track. And so they're very focused on preventative measures and being a one-stop shop for resources. And the beauty of that, there are a lot of things in Irvine that are specific to Irvine residents. So we have, for instance, Irvine's Children's Hospital Program. We call it iChip, and that's designed to connect originally children with medical insurance if they didn't have it through their parents. It expanded later to include adults. Well, if you don't live and work in Irvine, I mean, geez, I was a police officer for a long time in Irvine. I didn't know it existed. That's where Four Families really steps in and helps engage the community community with services that are specific to people that, you know, maybe have insurance. They, of course, can refer to county services too, but there's a lot more that Four Families is doing on a private level that we have the benefit and the beauty of kind of stealing their expertise to be able to connect them to different services. So now we can not only accommodate people that are in county services and have county insurance, we can also accommodate people that have private insurance. Do you want to touch on anything? The other part about Four Families is they also, we get a lot of different private mental health professionals that want to be on our referral list. And so those people are vetted out by the entire team now. So Debbie might bring them in and we'll talk about what type of licensing do you have, what clientele do you like to work with, who can you work with, who can't you work with. And we go through an entire vetting process. They fill out almost like an application. We meet them as a team. We throw a bunch of different things at them. And some people will walk away and we're like, we would never refer that person to any one of our clients because they're just not ready or they don't have the training or experience that they need yet. And we get others where we're like, this is fabulous. I know exactly who I can refer you to. And we keep track of what insurances they take, where they're located. And so when someone comes in and says, I really need help finding a therapist, but I can't get through to my medical insurance provider, we all know how hard that is, right? So it's like calling DMV. We can help kind of streamline that and give you a list of people that specialize in specifically what you need assistance with and take your insurance. So we utilize those two on our team. So you have two full-time police officers. You have the Orange County mental health clinician. We have Four Families, the two ladies there that we steal. We additionally recognize that we work during business hours because that's when most of the providers are open, right? So if I want to do case management with you and want to be effective, I need to be able to pick up the phone and call the right people to connect you to services. But I can't be here 24 hours, and neither can my partner. And so we've trained other officers in the field that we call MELOs, Mental Health Liaison Officers, or Mahalo, depending on your flavor. And we try and get them, they get extra mental health training, usually an extra 40 hours. They meet with psychiatrists, they meet with county representatives, nonprofit agencies, people who specialize in working with veterans. They get the whole plethora, and then they spend time training with our team upstairs, being my partner Kevin and I, Debbie and her other licensed clinician, and what we're really trying to challenge them to do is keep up as best as you can with the resources that are trending and available, because a lot of those are dependent on funding. So today you have resources from Salvation Army, tomorrow you don't because they ran out of money. So it's cyclical, it's constantly changing, but it allows them to be out and present. When they're out working their normal patrol shift, they're on weekends, they're on days, they're on nights, they're kind of spread out throughout the city on various days and hours. They can go in and attach themselves to a call related to mental health services and help maybe that officer connect to the right resources, help triage that call, and streamline that information upstairs to our team faster. Because they have more training, they may be able to recognize something that another officer did not, to help expedite our response, and they know what we're really looking for. Now, one of the reasons that we're able to do that too is our department is very well trained. We spend a ton of time training our entire police department on how to recognize the difference between a developmental disability versus a cognitive impairment versus a mental health issue. And so our officers, by and large, that are out patrol, do a phenomenal job at facilitating mental health holds. And so feeding that into a PERT environment just wasn't the niche that we needed as a city. It's not that it's not effective. It is. We just found a different value in running our team a little differently for the needs of our specific residents. So we work on a caseload, which means every police report that has any nexus to mental health, regardless of what it is, will come through to our division. We're assigned by geographic area, so I take one area of the city, Kevin takes the other area of the city, and we triage the cases based on the severity. Somebody that is very dangerous to themselves, very dangerous to somebody else, we get out to those right away. To someone who maybe needs some resources, but we know we have a little more time, though Debbie and her partner can pick up that, make phone calls, set up appointments, bring people in, we can set up home visits. We try and be very flexible in our approach. So we triage the cases that are best for the client as well in terms of what clinician they go to. If I can see that you were already connected to a county clinician, maybe the CAT team responded and placed the 5150 that I know is most appropriate for a county clinician to follow up on that case to make sure we're streamlining care as best as possible. If not, it's somebody who's saying literally, and the police reports will notate, a lot of times their officers say they had a therapist, but the therapist quit or moved or whatever, and they can't find another one through their insurance provider. And a lot of times we'll get emails saying, hey, their insurance provider is this, and they really want a phone call from you with some help in connecting the dots. So we can try and match them up and try and speed up that pace in getting to clients in the field. And we're really just taking the resources directly to the client. So rather than me handing you a stack of papers and saying, good luck, hope we don't see you again, what we're really hoping is that we can kind of handhold through that process and say, okay, looking at the totality of circumstances, what we feel we really need to focus on is here. And in order to focus on here, we need to kind of do this resource first. Let's start there. Call me and let me know how that meeting goes. We may even help you set the appointment. And then let's take that next step. And so we'll set up several meetings. And we want to be incredibly flexible with how we do this because we recognize that we're working with a very challenging population that is experiencing very unique needs. So many of my clients who have schizophrenia or experience a lot of paranoia do not want officers in front of their house. Or maybe they just don't want their Irvine company or whoever they're renting from to see a police officer constantly in front of their residence. So we wear the uniform that you saw Kevin wearing, the soft approach. We try to make it obvious I'm a police officer. I came dressed a little different for you guys today, but we try to make it obvious we're a police officer, but not quite so formal as like what the chief is wearing. So we can hopefully get people to relax a little bit. It's a little softer approach. We get there's no questioning that I'm an officer. Versus if I came in plain clothes to a house, I might get someone telling me, prove you're a cop. Well, I can show my badge. Well, everybody buys those. I can buy that on Amazon. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm struggling to do that. So we want to make sure that we can really accommodate them in the environment they're willing to work with us in. Because I want to remove barriers and allow them to engage my team in whatever way they're willing to do it. If you want to meet me at Starbucks for coffee, we're going to have coffee. People see me drink a lot of coffee, and I promise you your tax dollars are well worth it. We're like, it's our fourth cup of coffee today. All right, we're just going to go through this. Maybe we're switching the tea. We go to home visits. We'll grab the cases and literally knock on your door and say, we're just here to see how you are. I noticed that you had a call for service on this day. What happened? How are things going, you know, now? What did you connect to? Did you connect to anything? Did you have an exit plan out of the hospital? What did that look like for you? And some people want the authority figure and will at least tell us what we want to know because they see the uniform and they're like, okay, officer, whatever you need to know. And other people don't want to talk to a cop and they're much more happy talking to my partner who's in plain clothes and she's a therapist, right? So we really try and meet them where they're at and try and get them to lower the barriers and the fears that they'll engage with us. We meet in public places. We meet pretty much anywhere they're willing to go and I'm allowed to go, I will meet you there. We have monthly meetings. Every month we meet with everyone who touches these cases. So once a month we meet with code enforcement, adult protective services, senior centers, anyone in our city that touches the residents that we work with. And basically we're always talking about that collaborative and networking. You might have a senior who had a medical aid, officer went out for the medical aid but realized that they were hoarding. Now you have all these different providers that all want to offer you different services, but it's too confusing for the client. So once a month we streamline those cases and say, okay, who's got John Doe? Five people raise their hands, great, let's streamline it. Who's taking point? What services are we offering? What's been refused? Where are we at? And it just helps to have one consistent face, maybe two, instead of having six different people show up at six different times. We have a broad scope of clientele. We'll work with the consumer, their families. We offer grief and bereavement assistance. So any case where that we see that comes through that maybe isn't mental health related, somebody lost a spouse unexpectedly, somebody lost a child in a tragic accident, we will pull those cases as well and have a therapist call about a month after. And then the response we normally get is everyone is forgotten. Everyone else has moved on with their life. I'm still suffering with this. You know, I can't believe you remembered. And it's a great way to get four families connected to that and get them into different grief and support groups or different therapy that will allow them to continue feeling engaged and supported by the city and their loved one has not been forgotten. We're always working to help educate and reduce stigma. We work with the National Alliance on Mental Health. We serve on mental health panels. We go to public events as much as possible and serve in different PR aspects. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. This is just one of the small things that we've put together to try and educate people on reducing stigma and some of the most common resources that we refer people to. There's resources directly on the back. Coming the month of May, you'll see a lot of videos that are going to be produced and put out on our social media platforms. We have Facebook, Instagram, anyone that anyone wants to use. This is a small part of our team. You see my direct partner and I, and those are some of our mellows that are often in the field. I'm talking super fast because I know that we're running out of time here. I'm going to skip this part on success stories because I want to give you guys time for questions. And then if you want more information, I'm happy to provide it to you and how some of those successes have worked. But is there anything that I can answer for you? Yes.
First of all, I just want to commend you. As a mental health professional, this is one of the most comprehensive programs I've seen put together.
We try.
And you had somebody evidently come in and help you with all the psychological ramifications of dealing with those who are mentally challenged. Because you've even thought out how they're going to respond and what to do about it when they respond. I mean, it's really put together well.
We reached out to a lot of the main players, NAMI very early on, Mental Health Association, said, hey, this is what we want to do. do you have any advice, any suggestions? And to be honest, the first few weeks we tried this, we piloted it in just a very small section of the city first to see, do our residents even like this? Will they respond well to it? And at first I felt like I was selling used vacuum cleaners, right? Hi, you know, please don't come to your door when there's not a problem. So it took a little while to transition. And once word got out what we were doing and there was a lot more, you know, public media and stuff like that, now it's welcomed. And in fact, people will call us on it, like, you know, it's been 2 weeks since you called me. Why didn't you check in?
I've longed to see a program like that. I mean, I appreciate I've known all these years that these people have been homeless sitting around on the streets. And I knew that they were mentally ill, most of them, but that idea was always challenged.
And
they're not mentally ill, they just don't want to work.
Sure.
You know, that's the answer up here.
And we work with many that just refuse to go into shelters. I've got you, but I've got placement, and they don't go. So we wrap our arms around, we just take care of the best we can in the street.
Do you allow them to leave? If they want to leave.
Oh, yeah. Well, normally what we'll do is with soft approach, I'll come and maybe I'm buying you a cup of coffee, maybe I'm sitting with you, and I won't even ask about resources the first couple times I see you. So the first couple times it's just you being warm enough to my presence that we're okay. And then eventually, you know, I'll try and trickle into that conversation. Well, how are you doing? What would be helpful for you? Well, you know, I can't even get my mail, or I can't get a job because I don't have an address. Okay, well, you know, or I don't have an ID card. Well, why don't we go get you an ID card? Well, I had to go all the way to DMV and I don't like the bus. Okay, well, I can either get you a bus pass or I can drive it to DMV and I'll sit with you while you get your new ID card and then I'll drive you back to your
house. That's great.
Commissioner Reynolds, you have a question.
This just seems like such a fantastic program, and I'm wondering what efforts have been made or what efforts can be made to duplicate this program in other cities in the county.
We connect with the Department of Justice on the national level. And we're going through a little bit of a process with them to try and be more of a sister city as a training satellite. That is one of our goals, so that nationwide we're able to connect more cities with what we do and how we do business. But we are out actively in the community. So you've probably heard of the, I was confused the acronyms, because they have CTI and CIT. The CIT training for officers, where they go and learn more about mental health, we teach in those.
Okay.
So I instruct, and one of the classes that they take at the level 3 CIT is how to build your own program, and we come in and we bring videos and pictures and magazine articles and tell them how to structure for what works best for their community. So we're always out spreading that message, and we're on every panel, everything, even anyone that will have me, we try and come out and talk to. So we've had people from Minnesota call us. We were at Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for the National League of Cities presenting. We've been really across the nation now, and so we get a lot of phone calls from a lot of different police departments. It really comes down to the ability of what is their most significant concern. Is it homelessness? And is that the goal that we have to, like in Anaheim, where they're really digging into how do we solve this problem? Is it mental health? What do they see their needs and what's the community really asking for? And then funding. I mean, most cities don't have a licensed marriage and family therapist and a licensed clinical social worker at their beck and call.
That's right. Well, I know Irvine has resources that other communities don't. How about Orange County Sheriff's Department? Is that a place that this has been exported or is being exported to?
We've done presentations with them, and we meet usually about every month, every 2 months, with all the officers that work. Most departments have a homeless liaison officer. They don't necessarily have a mental health liaison officer. Kevin and I are unique in that we do both. He's designated, or that's one of his collaterals, his main assignments, but we have this whole other animal that we're working with at the same time. And we meet with every officer in Orange County that has a similar assignment. So we can say, hey, I worked with Helen today. She told me she was heading down to Laguna Beach will pipe up and say, yeah, I saw her yesterday. I offered her this. She said she was going to check in on Monday. So we connect and try and bridge that gap. But we can only lead the horse to water. We can't always make them drink.
My gasoline, too, that I think is a large part of why we can do what we do at Irvine, why we're successful. So Jenny also has either has or is close to an advanced degree. Tell me again what you're...
I'm getting a master's degree in psychology, so I'm in my thesis stage right now, and I did general psych just to bridge every gap of the population that we work with, and then I have an emphasis on threat assessment in my thesis statement.
So a lot of it, I mean, from my perspective, a lot of this is programs are often successful because of the people that are attached to them. And so people like Jenny and Kevin and Debbie, and having the right people, I think it's just part of what makes it so successful. They care so much. I'd also introduce Sergeant Sarah Tynefoot. So she is their fearless leader, and she oversees our mental health and homelessness on programming. And so just wanted to to acknowledge you as well.
I think the chief is definitely right. It is very much about people, because you have to have a passion to work with this population. If you don't, it comes across as very fake and very, you know, over, you're trying too hard, right? And people see through that. And I tell our officers all the time, we're constantly training our own officers in our police department in addition to everyone else in Orange County. And I always tell them, when you talk about behavioral analysis and somebody sizing you up, they always say cops do that all the time, right? There's no one that's better than that, than somebody who has mental illness, because they're so used to being stigmatized and so used to someone cracking them down, you know, to a low level, that they can read you and your thoughts and your intentions quicker than you can as a police officer. So you have to want to be there, because if not, it comes across and they know that. They're not stupid. And we work very hard on trying to get our officers, you know, and they do. They do an amazing job. But it really understanding that this is something that can be worked with, but you have to want to be there. And I stumbled into it. I got lucky. But I love it. And that's why, you know, my partner and I both have gone for advanced degrees. And we're both lucky, I think, as well, to be on our peer support team. And we had crisis negotiator training, which I would say in my mind is a huge plus for anyone that wants to do this job, because you need to be able to de-escalate.
We have a couple of minutes for some audience questions.
Well, I had a couple of questions.
Yes, sure.
And the very, very great work you guys are doing. And
thank you.
Congratulations. We could use you in Anaheim and work cities. But the question I had, number one is, what's the volume on the situation in Irvine? Second one is, to the best of your assessment, is it indigenous to Irvine? And the third is, Irvine is a well-to-do city, and contrasting with some of the northern areas, certainly Los Angeles or Oakland or other areas, where homelessness is a devastating problem.
Yes.
And so, obviously you have resources, but you also have, from a policing standpoint, less other problems to handle, less crime, less antisocial issues, drugs, and so on, I would imagine, in contrast. So that's a dual advantage. So the idea of duplication is always very, very attractive. You know, I get that too. But it's not easy when you're torn in 20 other social directions, not just homeless. So, so those two issues are important, because, you know, we've seen a high volume of people in Anaheim surrounding my own program for many years. We wonder sometimes where they're coming from. But have you had experiences in Irvine with a much smaller population? Which, like,
we don't have as broad of a population, and I will say that ours in Irvine, they blend in better. So
yeah.
Our population, I started this 6 years ago, and I started as a business community officer, and I was working with our homeless because they were in my business communities. And I was able to start recognizing who was homeless and who wasn't, but it really took me a long time. Because gosh, you're anywhere near the universities, and you can't tell the students who are cramming for, you know, finals versus somebody who everyone blends in, and everyone has a smartphone, and everyone has a laptop, and they're using the free Wi-Fi. And so it really took a long time for me to get a grasp over who we had. So I think we have more than what people realize at times, because they do blend in very well, and there's just a different take. But the bulk of our homeless population is very transient, and by that I mean we see a flux that will go out to the beach on the nice days, and they want to be down that area close to Laguna, and there's other resources there that maybe they're connecting to, and then they go through Irvine to go to like Santa Ana, or they'll come back through Irvine. A lot of people don't necessarily want to bed down necessarily the way you would in a more traditional city that, you know, we have a lot of loops and a lot of curvy weird streets and things that I think distract some of that just by design. But we also have people that are indigenous to Irvine that have been homeless for many years. So one lady in particular, I'll give you an example. I remember her as a brand new officer, writing letters and putting them all over the outside of her patio, ramblings that didn't make any sense. And she was, you know, like 80 then as a brand new cop. I've been on 13 years. And I worked with her as a homeless individual for 10 years of my career. She's, you know, she's Irvine. She's one of our residents. But mentally ill, schizophrenia, was a doctor, she was a gynecologist for many years, and just very stubborn and did not want to engage in resources. So we have a few of those that are Irvine residents. We knew them before they were homeless. We try and prevent the homelessness. Maybe that's not preventable. And then we're just trying to take care of them the best we can once they're on the street.
But what volume of homelessness do you deal with in a year?
We've never been able to, we're getting an entire new computer database to collect better statistics, so I can't give you an exact number because right now we don't have the ability to stat it, but I would say on any given day we're dealing with maybe 25 to 30 people roughly that are homeless in the city, and we make contacts every day. So in that sense, I don't know if that's the best answer to your question. I apologize.
Well, there's
for
no
that.
Right answer. I was just curious.
Yeah.
I expected around 25 to 30 people.
Yeah, I mean,
so
and that's
right.
Like I'm gauging that, but it's hard to keep track because
right.
Sometimes we have more and sometimes we have significantly less. It just really just not, it's not easy to tell because there's a lot of other factors I think that play into that. But we do try really hard to either prevent that homelessness, like my partner said before, because we know that there are many that are on the verge of losing their apartment because they've had the police out too many times, or they've had too many episodes, or they've had too many. So we'll try and engage in resources then to prevent it. And if it can't be prevented, then we're working with other entities of how we get them in. Or you have an adult mentally ill child who's now living with parents, right? And now the parents are tired of it. The parents want to kick him out. So then how do we engage the family and wrap our arms around the family to give them the courage, the strength, and the ability to keep trying to help that loved one as best as we can to get everyone on the same page?
Thank you very
much. You're welcome.
Much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Do we have time for just one more question?
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to know, how are you tracking the veterans separately? And are you working with the county? The county has a plan to... Well, not necessarily OSI for vets, but just the county in general has a plan to end homelessness by 2019, so we're 8 months out.
Yes.
And we have a by-name list that we're capturing, and there are certain individuals that have access to that list, and who are, and so you have to partner with the organization to get those names on the list. And I'm just wondering if you're including those folks on the list. And if not, maybe we can talk, because we are a designated partner as the County Veteran Service Office. That's another hat that I wear, so maybe there's opportunity for us to partner with.
That would be amazing.
And ensure that those people are captured on the list, so that when we do start housing these folks, that those people are being taken into consideration.
That would be amazing, and I don't want to speak for Kevin, because that's his specialty, so I don't know if he's already connected, but I can say we would love that opportunity, because vets, babies, and dogs. Like, you know, it's like, we're not going to drive by, and I'm not going to stop and
see
pet, hug, and vets are totally
okay.
In my heart,
so
love that opportunity. She's like, oh, well, we're stopping, aren't we? I'm like, yeah. You
know, we have two more hours. I just wanted to, I'm sorry, I walked in late, but is it safe to assume that you already mentioned that this organization honored Officer Lindsay in 2015 for her work?
I did not.
Oh,
I'm good
no.
at skipping,
yeah.
though.
I thought maybe Mike would have put it either.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Well,
I always pass that part.
Well,
and
I can understand. That's easy to see.
Thank you.
And you've created a nice segue, David, to go into your presentation. I'd like to, we all would like to hear about goals for the nonprofit organization.
Yeah, very good.
And if I could just read the item first.
Sure.
It's item number 5 is the goals nonprofit organization presentation.
And this is David Welk.
Yeah, you guys might want to take a little stretch. I know it's a long time to sit down. I would encourage as a coach.
Well, stand up and stretch. That's all right.
Stretch and run around. Maybe go down the
hallway.
Nice meeting you.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Thanks for
coming.
Thanks
for
coming.
Thanks
for coming. Thanks for coming. I only have a master's degree in business. I'm not going for any doctorate, although my father constantly pressured me. I got a position. Who's in tech support?
So your master's is not in tech support.
It actually, I'm very technically savvy, but I don't want to mess up your nice machines here. So, and we'll look at. So yeah, of course, another dreaded PowerPoint, but I'll try to make it a lot different than the other one. So it's a little variety, which is, of course, as we all know, is the spice of life. I'm Dave Wilk. So I'm the founding executive director of Goals, which used to be called Disney Goals, which you'll find in a little bit of history on. And I was told I had 15 minutes. I think for Reed, he's a great friend. He's also served for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Thanks. So I did it. I just did a stream of consciousness thing last night, and it came out to 15 minutes and 3 seconds. I'm already a minute over.
You're
going
to be timing.
Well, that's 10 minutes and then 5 for questions.
Oh, wow. I mean, I'll just skip through.
Doesn't mean that right now.
OCHRC, that folder.
There
you go. And go to the. Let's go to the PowerPoint one, not the MP4. The MP4 will run it in 15 minutes and 3 seconds. Mine will come in 2.5 hours. You got time, right? Yeah. So, I started Goals at the behest of a man named Michael Eisner, who was the CEO of the Walt Disney Company, and he was eventually left the company after enriching many people. Get the slideshow going right there. You know, look at that beautiful logo. So we used to be called Disney Goals, and our history in this presentation is in 3 parts. So you can have me back a couple more times if I run over. You know, do part one at least. But part one was we called the Disney era,
when we were called Disney Goals. And this day, there's still people that come out, it's great what the Walt Disney Company is doing. And I said, well, they're not really, you know, involved that much anymore. Wish they were. But Michael left the company, and with him left the name, because there were other folks that took over that wanted to invest Disney wealth into global issues. But having a program running in the rough neighborhoods of Anaheim and surrounding communities didn't fit into the global picture for, you know, one of the largest corporations in the world. They wanted to save the reefs and the rainforests, saving poor kids in Anaheim, a few blocks from Disneyland, whatever. People make corporate decisions. And so part two talks about sort of an intermediate era where we went solo. No Disney in the name. I was sat in a meeting with a bunch of lawyers, about as many as in here up in Burbank one day, and I was looking at all these people. I was just trying to think how much money they were making. You know, and I thought, boy, if they could just give me maybe a few days of their salaries, I could run Goals for the next 10 years. I didn't get much money out of them at that point, but it was clear they just didn't want to be part of a neighborhood-based grassroots entity walking through the streets of Anaheim. So, but undaunted, you know, I said, we got a lot of dreams, and we're going to live out the dreams. We're going to keep expanding. Part three, I want to touch on something called the ABC Initiative, which stands for a neighborhood, but it also stands for a big, basically global idea. So get this to corporate Disney, okay? Anyone shareholders in here? No? Okay, get this, okay? We've got global dreams too. My dream is that one day Goals could be in every low-income community across the world. Let's start here in Orange County and get a lot of people behind it and make not just one neighborhood better, but the entire city as we seed it in other neighborhoods, and many better cities make for a better country. Now, don't they? So Bob Iger, listen up. Let's revisit the Disney era, which is itself quite fascinating. The idea of, I started a program in New York City a long time ago, the way Disney got involved into Goals and hockey, which has been a hallmark of the Goals program, ice hockey of all weird things, came a movie that Mike Leiser produced called The Mighty Ducks. Has anyone ever seen The Mighty Ducks? Raise your hand. Very good. Very good. You're dating yourself. 1992. Okay. So, following on the heels, that movie starring Emilio Estevez, who I met and hung out with for a while, he was a great guy. Couldn't skate like he was portrayed in the movie, but basically that movie was so popular because it showcased the guy who was kind of a white-collar guy who had been arrested for drunk driving or something. Assigned community service to work with a batch of kids from an inner city, I believe in Minneapolis, if there is such a thing. So Mike Leiser loved sports. His sons played hockey in Ivy League schools, and he got in his head after seeing the movie that he wanted to do something unique involving hockey. Acquired the Mighty Ducks franchise, acquired an NHL franchise, and called it the Mighty Ducks after the film. He was lampooned for his choice of hockey uniforms, which I agree with is kind of ugly, but he didn't care. He said, this is going to sell. And they pushed out an NHL team, which did very well. Along the way, Eisner wanted to build some unique programs associated with the NHL team that were non-traditional. And here's a scene from the movie, just to remind people. Is everyone over the age of 13 in here? Not sure. Rita, you're over 13 yet? I don't know. How do you turn the volume on? Turn it up. Gordon Bombay.
I think it's at the top of the keypad.
I
about it in jail. There was only?
Only for a little while. I'm going to move back to Philly.
Thank you for sharing that.
No problem.
All right. Get out on the ice. Let me see what you can do.
Just so you know, you really suck.
Hey, I'll decide you suck around here. They really suck. So what's our record anyway?
Oh, no. We was pretty close, though. We only lost by 5. And we also got about 10. So what do we do now?
Coach. Where's your coach? How do you do?
Just yelled a lot. Yeah, that's how we hurt his arm.
His arm?
Yeah, well, maybe he's yelling at us. Good old bastard, run out of play. Oh, you sucker. Skate, you old bastard. You
heart attack. Great. All right, look, I gotta make a phone call. You against you four.
Hey, we got names, you know?
I'm sure you do. I think they're very nice names. I might even learn them. For now, I'll get light up. Oh, and you need anything?
Switch.
Okay, so the Ducks, this movie really went on to become a sensation. Very popular, and a couple years later, they did D2, second movie, a third movie. Emilio Estevez came down, and I was talking to him at the fundraising event that Disney pulled off, which they raised a bit of funds for goals. And I remember him coming in the locker room to meet like his real life self, which was me. I was brought out from New York to build a program. Michael wanted me to come out and build this program where I'm presenting one of our championship trophies some years back. And Emilio Estevez, someone introduced him. I said, Emilio, this is Dave Wilk. He's the director of this program. But I think all that Emilio Estevez, who's a movie actor, and his father was famous, and his brother, Charlie Sheen, very famous. All he heard was director. And I think he thought he was in another movie. Because he said, oh, you're the director of the film. I said, no. I'm a director of an actual program, which has little elements of which are similar to the role you played in the movie. He goes, oh. Anyway, we had a nice time together. we went very interesting, yeah. But nice guy, but... Disney was very involved with this in the early years, built an ice rink, a training center in Anaheim. I understand it's now down here in Irvine. Irvine's got everything, man. Man, it's a nice facility. I was in that facility walking through the Great Park and said, we got to move that up to Anaheim. But the Ducks took over that facility from the Walt Disney Company in 2006, the Samueli organization. This is the ice arena that has been the home for goals, ice hockey. Our program runs free hockey programs for kids. We target specific neighborhoods, which are all low income, and we actually outfit, transport, coach, and run curriculum and community service built around, initially it was just the hockey experience, now we brought it into many athletic experiences. The ice rink still stands. It was designed by Frank Gehry, who's a very famous architect, and it was a very complex land transaction. The ice arena is, the land on which it sits is actually owned by Goals. The old redevelopment authority conveyed it to our nonprofit back in 1993. And Disney then built the rink. So we have a ground lease, release the space on which the rink sits and for which they pay us lots of ice time. So we're able to offer our services free to low-income kids. Really, I think we're still the largest ice hockey program for low-income children in the United States. We serve hundreds and hundreds of kids a year. And we also have a free ice skating program for school kids across the city. So it's really great. So in 2006, as Eisner had just exited Disney, which, you know, no matter how rich and successful you are and how rich you make other people, there's always some sort of weird politics involved. So he exited even though he didn't want to. And the Disney Company, in their wisdom, decided, or infinite wisdom, whether it was good or not, I think it was good for the franchise. They sold the team to Mr. Henry Samueli, who was the founder of Broadcom. And they changed the whole look, and lo and behold, the newly named Ducks, or Anaheim Ducks, went from Mighty Ducks to Anaheim Ducks, won the Stanley Cup and the next year. So probably not the best time that Disney took to build a team.
And now the Stanley Cup is going to stay. All aboard. In the USA.
That guy was Tamu Solani, who played with the Ducks for many, many years. Wonderful guy. I had the great opportunity to play golf with him once. I don't play golf. I play tennis, largely, and hockey, and other sports, but I'm not very good at golf because I've only played it three times. But I had the luxury to play with Tamu, who was probably the greatest athlete who ever suited up in for the Ducks, and one of the greatest in the history of hockey. And he was a phenomenal golfer and as well. And I remember him feeling sorry for me because I tried to play left-handed because I shoot left-handed in hockey. And he said, no, no, try my clubs. So he had beautiful clubs and let me play. And I spent several hours with him, along with another group that day. It was a fundraising event. And such a wonderful man and a great hockey player. And it was great. At the very end of his career, he was able to win a cup and raise the Stanley Cup. After Disney sold the club, we went solo. Now, it wasn't like being cast in the wilderness or everything. Disney was very nice about it, gracious. And, you know, I've always been gracious about it, too. Which is, you know, everyone develops different interests, and I considered Michael Eisner sort of like a godfather figure. He was, not in a Sicilian sense, but he was a great friend and still is. He still funds programs, makes a very generous donation to our nonprofit annually. We're one of the very few, if only, Orange County-based organizations that actually receives a grant from the Eisner Foundation. But we just embraced a simple name. Instead of calling ourselves Disney Goals, we call ourselves Goals. Our corporate name is actually Growth Opportunities for Athletics, Learning, and Service. They're all different pieces of the program, which, again, we don't have a lot of time to get into every bit in detail. But over the next several years, I started expanding Goals. I said, what the heck? I'm not going to sit here and just play hockey. Let's broaden our outreach in the community, not just with programs, but in terms of where we're reaching kids. I had to kind of rebuild the whole construct and kind of step out of the whole Mighty Ducks hockey world. We still have hockey. We still run it year-round. We still run it 5 days a week, busing kids in. I have a bus fleet. We do all these cool things. But I said, let's add to the mix. I never thought I was crazy. Where are you going to get the resources? I said, you know what? I don't know. Let's just do stuff. Okay, there's a great amount of need. And I don't really like tooting my own horn, but I had to push, you know, in a lot of directions. And I still have to push in a lot of directions because a lot of people look at me and say, well, you're talking about something else that seems impossible. And so over the last decade, we've taken all the empty land surrounding a facility. It was a broken down old county courthouse up in north central Anaheim. Fareed's been in that courthouse. I don't know if anyone else has been in there, but Althon, I don't know if you've been in there yourself, but it was just an abandoned building. So he was going to tear it down. I said, don't tear it down. Let's make it a center, a crossroads. It's right in the heart of town, right off the 91, surrounded by homeless people. So Jenny, come back. And I said, let's stake spot here, and let's turn this into a wellspring for opportunity for thousands of kids. Well, 10 years later, we've got soccer ring, outdoor. We've got a couple roller hockey arenas. I took over an arena in the park, which is going to be shut down by the city, turned into a roller hockey center. We have tennis courts. We have the Lakers, got the Lakers involved. We have Laker Legends Court, which was a creation that I came up with, and Jenny Buss approved it. She's one of the sisters in the Buss family and gave us a small grant to help and give us the rights to use all of the Laker legends, Will Chamberlain, Kobe Bryant, their names are, and retired jerseys are now hanging at Laker Legends Court in the center of Anaheim. How cool is that? So we built relationships. It's just a smattering of programs. We started a program for the disabled because there's a large center very close to our operations called My Day Counts, 800 disabled adults. We started partnering and doing services to support the disabled who don't ever get out of their warehouse and encourage job training. We play sports, adaptive sports, with our teens helping the adults. We've launched our expansion into other cities, and not just Anaheim. And so as we built out this area, which is about 5 acres now, around Goals, and took over all the vacant property I could find right around me initially, I said, look, Disneyland's down the street. That's at one end of Anaheim, you know, in the central part of Anaheim. So I kind of kiddingly said, let's call our area Goals Land. The difference is we're not going to charge $150. Parking is free. It's a good deal. Come visit. I like that. So, you know, so by 2017, we opened some new venues, mentioned Laker Legends Court. Some other companies sometimes will be shameless and name an arena after a major sponsor like Berg Electric Company, which is one of the largest electric companies. So we built Berg Electric Arena for outdoor play. The Goals Pond was actually kind of like a little, you know, echo of the old Honda Center. The Honda Center used to be called The Pond. It's a small rink where we do some sports. So we developed a kind of urban sports concept called Dreamscapes. Looking at a piece of vacant land, you can see it as a place to throw garbage or homeless people to camp. Or if you use your imagination, it can become a place where kids can play, folks can enjoy, and it looks pretty. So we built gardens as well. We have beautiful community gardens, and we're still working on one. So we, as I said, we expanded to three cities, and six school districts now are involved with us. We actually even, for some reason, one night I woke up in the middle of the night, hey, let's try starting a charter school. It seems like the thing to do. Little did I know that it would be a little more complicated than just that, and there would be a lot of all sorts of weird political pushback and wondering, what the heck are you up to now? So, you know, we're still wrestling with some of those issues, but, you know, I'm glad we tried it, and we have a very successful little charter school. It's an elementary school, K to 6, 240 children. So we'll see where that evolves. But, you know, the bread and butter goals is out in the communities, doing enrichment, walking to the neighborhoods that nobody else really wants to go, and, you know, trying to figure out how to make things life better for people that don't have any money and really don't have much of a future. So we've gone down to Oakview, which is a neighborhood in it's the 1 square mile, kind of a tough neighborhood, and down in Huntington Beach. We've involved over 500 children there over the last 6 years with an after-school program and tied in with the Ocean View School District. We're the largest youth provider in that community. Obviously, Anaheim is our historic home. About 60-70% of our combined population. We serve about 1,500 youth of various ages, 6 to 19 years old a year. Placentia Yorba Linda has been a tremendous growth area for us. The school district there has partnered with us brilliantly and providing grant support, and we raise money too and do a lot of stuff. We serve 5 school sites. The crown jewel is probably our middle school program, Goals for Valdez. Yeah. And so I'll breeze quickly through in the last minute or two on ABC, a better community. So where does all this lead? You know, all this experience, all this know-how, trying to do the impossible, climb these hills, you know, sometimes having to deal with slings and arrows for people that have other provincial interests, whatever. You know, okay, so we kind of put it all together. I was asked by the mayor and city planning director last summer to look at a community they call up in Anaheim called ABC. It stands for Three Streets, Alameda, Brownwood, and Catalina. And the Human Relations Council, right, was involved and had a grant and was doing some organizing work, very good work, I understand, for several years supported by grants. But their time was lapsing. They had a limited number of years of support. And I walked in, I didn't know they were involved, but walked out there and was given a tour by one of the young staff people that the council had. And when I walked through the neighborhood, I was appalled. I just have to say that. I was appalled that these conditions could still exist in Anaheim, so close to Disneyland, and I was disturbed that there was no broader plan that anyone seemed to have, the owners of these various tenement buildings and the city itself or anyone else. So I went home that night and in my, you know, little hovel of an office, typed out a better community, and I wrote like a 4 or 5 page like plan. Let's do this. And then so since last June, we brought in our teen service program. We brought in, trying to raise attention and awareness, and we use this as a little simple logo, building blocks, ideas, champions, ideas. It's a puzzle to figure out, and we've made staggering progress in just 6 months, raised all sorts of resources. We opened a clubhouse in the community. We took an old abandoned building that was going to be torn down. I begged the owners in the community, don't do it. Let me try it. They laughed at me. They laughed at me. I said, don't laugh at me. Come to my dreamscape. This was the same thing. This was worse than what you've got in your community. And now look, we got all these things. So they came. And this is from opening just a week or so ago. There's some little kids. And Nicole and little Eileen and Sophia and her brother Ezekiel, and some kids, the Ducks, got involved with this. So we've gotten involved and turned the tide. We cleaned up the folks who were homeless around, suggested that they camp somewhere else. Sorry, but we've got to make some room for all these kids that didn't have any activities, no opportunities. The clubhouse is 1,000 square feet. It's beautiful now. Come visit any day. I'm wearing my construction boots because I was there early this morning. We're opening up a big deck. We're opening up, the Ducks are committed to building a rink in the community with us. We'll run the programs there. We're embedded. We're running programs. We're going to run them 6 days a week. And again, people ask where the dollars are coming from. I said, I don't really know and I don't care. But we're going to keep it open. And if I have to volunteer more of my day, nights, whatever. And I hope other people will too. So there's Luis Castro, one of my great coaches, on the roof. We hung the sign the day before we opened up the building. And it's completely restored. We've got put all kinds of sweat equity. I was there every day for 4 months, so I've been a stranger, sorry for you. But I've been doing construction myself, personally, leading the way with my coaches. And then by in the afternoon, go out and run programs for kids across other communities that we serve. So this is the plan for the future. Rinks, outdoor amphitheater, beach volleyball, beach soccer, the activity deck, gardens around it. We're making it into an oasis. And by the way, if anyone thinks that this isn't good, is like a 10-year plan, this is a 10-week plan, folks. If you come here in the middle of the summer, you will see the Fairmont Private School involved in volunteering, tutoring, homework, help, classes, garden crops growing in the garden. The city of Anaheim's jumping in. They're doing a big volunteer outreach on May 11th. They're coming into ABC to help me. Public utilities, public works, other agencies have signed up. I've got other private corporations stepping in. We have completely turned the tide, and I'm saying this is a great example. And in real time, less than 1 year, the neighborhood is, the psychology is totally different. Even the gang members and the drug dealers are coming up to me and asking me, can I find them a real job? And I said, well, if you have skills, I'll work on that. You can help me. But it's a very positive place now, and people are smiling, and they're all coming around, and it's a nice feeling to be part of. So ABC, there's a lot more to say about it. I'll just skip over the stuff. But, you know, we'll close up here by saying all those little ABCs, if we can get this kind of approach seated in areas that have these seemingly intractable long-term, and if they're functions of long-term difficulties that human relations have probably tackled for years, of racism and structural economic issues, these are serious problems across the country. They plague cities, especially older cities. But it is possible, even in the face of all that. You don't need to completely revolutionize, although I like people who do use strong language, I think it's necessary. You don't need to revolutionize our economic system. You can go in from a grassroots basis and turn the tide extremely quickly and at very low cost. This is the way to do it. Come visit ABC and I'll show you.
That's great. You've done a metamorphosis there in that community.
Yeah, there's no question.
Yeah. Two questions.
Yeah.
How many people do you serve? What's an estimate?
In goals across the board? About 50, about 1,500 a year. The number's growing
right?
fast.
Yeah.
If I had more resources, I'd serve, you know.
And what is the criteria in terms of income for these people to be involved?
Poverty. Well, we don't have, you know, I don't ask people to provide tax returns or anything, but we try to target the program in communities where the need is extremely self-evident.
Okay.
So when you walk through a neighborhood or we talk to city folks, you know where's the troubles in town, where's the problem. That's where we've tried to organize.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you can't do it perfectly because sometimes if there's a lot of state funding, like with the charter school. You can't say, okay, only poor apply. I would prefer that to be the case. That's our mission, work with the underserved exclusively. But the law says you got to take whoever shows up. So you know what I mean? But by and large, we're targeting areas with extremely high levels of low-income families and where the needs are compounded by crime, crumbling infrastructure, and other antisocial issues, drug dealing, homeless issues. We're going there by design. But we're not going to organize, sorry to say, we're not going to organize in Laguna Niguel. We're just not going. But, you know, Santana's out there with, in LA, there's, I mean, they throw a dart at Chicago, my goodness. And I tried to talk to Rahm Emanuel. I didn't have the time of day for me. Maybe Lori Lightfoot will when I visit Chicago next year. The weekend I was in Chicago last year, 70 people were shot. Many of them were killed. So what's wrong with this city? They could use these programs too.
Well, what age groups do you serve?
Sorry?
Which age groups do you serve?
Not only it's 5 to whatever, but you know it's mostly up to about 19-20. But many of our AmeriCorps and service workers and volunteers are often college age. So as long as sometimes some folks go into college at higher ages these days. So.
And are you working with the City of Anaheim, their Workforce Development Board? Because there are special dollars that are designated for youth training and employment.
No, we are not working with everybody. I would love to.
The county has those facilities also, but Anaheim and Santa Ana have their own workforce boards.
Okay.
We do work with them, but there tends to be lots of dollars that are left over because we can't get the clientele when it comes to those youth programs.
Oh, I see.
It's 14 to 24. So I'd be happy to put you in touch.
I have many, many children in that age bracket. But yes, thank you. I don't know everything, obviously. That's a huge help. But yes, we have plans to link what we're doing with the transition, which we have a volunteer service corps called Goals Cadets, which has about 200 youngsters a summer. And it's called the Summer of Service. It's our own little Peace Corps. We take on all sorts of missions. And that's how we started the ABC project. They were the original engine to go in and help clean the neighborhood up under my direction. I went in there every day with them. And we're expanding that this summer. So we'll have several hundred teens involved, largely teens, with some college students too. But the California Conservation Corps, I just was down in the Los Pinos camp, which used to be a juvenile detention center. I've talked to them about expanding a longer-term stretch for young people to serve their country, serve their state. I'm a strong believer in that. I believe we all need to serve outside of our jobs. I serve outside of, I'm not paid to go there on weekends and do construction work, but I do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, help. That's great. Anything else?
Thank you so much.
I just want to acknowledge Dave as well. Yeah, I sit on the board of Goals, and it's an amazing organization, and nice to see what the results of it are. So thank you, Dave, for coming and being this presentation.
Thank you for inviting me, Fred. It's great to catch up. I haven't seen the guy in a couple months.
Yeah, you've been
busy. Did you also get grants besides private donations?
Yeah, we have a couple of after-school safety education grants, which are State Department of Education grants. The charter school is funded strictly by state dollars, state education dollars. And then, we do have some other grants that have come through. We're part of the ACT Collaborative up in Anaheim area, so we receive some dollars. That's corporate dollars that are steered through. There are limited dollars from the city itself and the school districts, and do have discretionary funds, and we still haven't cracked that code yet, but I'm trying. We've got a meeting with your peers tomorrow, George and Jillian, who you probably know in Anaheim, great event. So they're coming to ABC, and I'm like, guys, give me the drug money. At least, come on, give me something. Cough it up. So, we're going to try, because there's a lot of drug money flowing around, and this police confiscated, and then they have it to use. But so I'm trying to figure out ways in which we can engage some other public resources as well. Your idea is a good one with job training stuff. We're definitely going after that in a big way. With kids, they need to be placed, because many of these kids are dropping out of school.
Right.
It's a big problem.
There's definitely dollars for specific trades as well, and our big one of our biggest is the tourism trade. So there's dedicated dollars for that, and Anaheim obviously is.
Visit Anaheim just bestowed a grant on us of $20,000, and that was to help with the peripheral improvements around the clubhouse, which we're working on diligently night and day. And the ones I pointed to that will be open by the middle of July.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
this is a wonderful program.
Thank you.
From the before and after picture of that ABC location, I wrote, had a couple of slides in there.
Yeah.
You know, what it was and what you converted into.
Part three.
The swimming pool.
Part three.
You can invite me back.
Invite you back again. Later.
Or just come on up. Come up and master your next meeting up at ABC. It's cool. What I'm saying? It's the wave of the urban future, and it's here today.
Yeah, or maybe Fareed, at the next meeting, you could bring a before and after.
Yeah, I think it's something worth looking at. Things in perspective.
I really encourage you to come up, guys. It's different. First of all, it's a nicer room than this one that we have. And it's not, it's a little late. It is really nice.
That's hard.
Yeah,
that's
you
go
to the frat house before.
We'll even treat you. We'll give you some food or something. No, you can do it. You're welcome to do it or not do it. But
you're doing another opening something, right?
Yeah, we're doing an open house probably middle of June. It's a cool thing. I find it inspirational every day.
There's so many good things going on that we don't know about, and we need to have those focused on. I could see your program at the police department and your program on 60 Minutes someday. People what could
if they like to talk about good things.
In the group. Yeah. Yeah. That's the problem, is getting them to talk about all.
Thank you. Item number six is the update on the Goodwill program.
And since we're on a shortage of time, I will just tell you that is in progress, and we're getting close to a nominee, correct?
Yes. We've gone through the first round of approval.
Good.
And so we're on to the second and final round.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Do you have a copy of the agenda and everything? Or is it this one?
And I think...
Item number 7 is commission staff report. New commission staff introduction. Maureen, I'm going to butcher your last name. Thank you.
Just like that.
update Newport Mesa.
Databoy.
Okay. Update Newport Mesa incident and New Zealand tragedy. Hate crime network meeting and update of commission ad hocs, projects, and endorsements.
Thank you. Hello.
Finally, you get to speak.
Thank you. Just as a side note, before I came on board as the commission director, I was working for a program at ABC. So through with OC Human Relations, that's what they hired me on for. I do the groundwork there, and then that's when Carla came in. That was just so being able to see the improvements and everything. That was just amazing. Okay, so I wanted to introduce Maureen. Who comes to us from one of our main partners in hate crime work, CARE. So she joined us March 18th. Do you want to give a little bit of background on what you've done and how you joined us?
Thank you. I was graciously recruited by Dawn. Didn't expect that, so I'm happy to be here. I have done some work with CARE and have legal background with CARE for almost 5 years in their civil rights division. And I have done nonprofit stuff with them and private sector for a long time. My master's degree is in education, and my undergrad is in criminal justice, and also happen to have a paralegal certificate from UCI. But just really enjoy doing the community service work, so I was happy to kind of entertain the possibility of working with OC Human Relations. I've known Joyce and Dawn and Ali for a long time. I don't know, many years. And so when Dawn called me, it was, again, out of the blue, but it was something that I had to consider. So I'm happy to be here. Hopefully I can make a positive contribution and help out in whatever way I can.
Thank you, Maureen. So Maureen is going to be overseeing our Police Community Dialogue Program, our Community Reconciliation Program, and facilitating training and any other community trainings that are requested. So welcome aboard. We're happy she's here. Now we have a full team again.
So just so I've been doing the sensitivity training with the Sheriff's Academy for about 4.5 years already. So hopefully that'll be an easy transition. All the other stuff I'll kind of learn along with Joyce and everyone else. So thank you.
Welcome aboard. Thank you.
Update on Newport Mesa. Because of time, I'm not going to do that, but I just realized that the updates for those are in our commission, our monthly summary activities. In New Zealand, we had Commissioners Faruqi and Nwisi go to the vigil and with commission staff, and then the last part of that, you'll see commission staff have been working closely with some council staff in responding to the Costa Mesa, Newport Mesa school district incident. So they've had meetings and dialogues, and they've tapped on us to be able to support them in terms of some of those assessments for the school district. So I kind of just wanted to share that that's something that the commission staff have been involved in. Joyce also facilitated a hate crime network meeting, and I just wanted her to give update on that.
No, it was a nice meeting to come together, and especially after the tragedy of New Zealand, to really talk about our county, what's going here, and an observation that I've made is, you know, the these, even though, you know, these tragedies happen elsewhere, they do have an impact here in Orange County. And, you know, it's nice to go to vigils, it's nice to go to show support, but, you know, I was sharing with the network that, you know, maybe coming up with something that we can come together more closely with the community, not necessarily waiting until there's a hate crime, to come together and show our support and do work with each other and bringing different communities together. So,
so that's an idea that I think we're gonna try to see if we can promote within the hate crime network, discussing what is an idea that will bring us together to celebrate, you know, our differences, or celebrate us as a community rather than coming together every single time that there's a tragedy. How are we able to build those relationships so they know that when it does happen, we're able to support them and they're able to support us? So I know there was some interest around and we have discussions on how that might grow and evolve. So lastly, in the packet, the last page, before I left, I started putting this document together so we could be able to track as a commission. What are some action items that the commission has taken on, ad hoc committees that have been approved, any projects that they have taken on, and then the endorsements and collaborations, so just so we're aware where we are and the status of each. So it looks like the Goodwill Committee that's an ongoing. There was one that I specifically do have questions about, but Rabbi's not here, so I know that we had a presentation from the Asians Advancing Justice, and there was a discussion and it was approval that the commission would look at a document that was created several years back about free speech and hate speech, and I don't think that ever was done. There was an ad hoc committee that was supposed to come together, and I don't think anybody was assigned to it. So I wanted to bring it up because it was approved and the commission needs to address it, but I'll bring it up to Rabbi to ensure that someone gets assigned to that committee. Then there was a project that was approved last year for Commission Living Room Dialogues, which was postponed because of my maternity leave, but we'll start looking at that and see how we might be able to make sure we do that this year. And I think that's it. I don't think that I reviewed the minutes for the past meetings and it didn't seem like there were any new ad hoc committees that were added. I think the only other one is the bylaw review committee, and I've heard that there's been work being done, so I'm not sure if that's completed or not, but I guess we'll.
Yeah, so the work isn't completed. By the end of the week, the revised bylaws up to this point will go out to the committee for additional review.
Okay. All right, that's all.
Okay, item number 8, update from OC Chiefs and Sheriff.
Nothing to report.
Okay. Then item number 9, OCSD Interfaith Council update. Nothing? Okay. And then any announcements from commissioners or additional items for upcoming agendas?
I was just thinking, in relation to what you were mentioning, Norma, about coming with some programs to this hate crime and the network and working with different partners. And I perhaps mentioned this before as well, and this is something that falls within our realm and area as our human relations. I know we have our annual gala and for the council to raise money and awareness and all that. And the different things that we do, but is it possible to have an annual forum, some kind of a county-wide event? Conference, if you want to call it, for lack of a better word, inviting different partners and things, and OCH human relations facilitating along with others, with the cities and all the law enforcement, what have you, to really understand different issues and what's going on and where we are, and and hopefully from that, the communities, people that have been impacted, and who create situations which bring about hate and what have you, we cannot have a dialogue. Even though they are happening in different pieces in different areas, we have an annual kind of a convention.
What is your vision of that? Is it like with different breakout sections?
Yeah, it could be panels. We bring in experts, we bring in people who have been impacted, how that change has made it possible. For instance, even both have been in business 30 years or plus, right? And they have cadets and others who came through, they have worked in communities, and how that has perhaps saved those kids getting into crime or something else, or hating someone, or having issues of other sorts. So this, it could evolve. One, we have these discussions and showcase this, and but we also build that better understanding and tightening up of our resources and knowledge and experiences. The earlier presentation made by Jenny, where they are trying to be the beautiful work that they're doing, right? How many people know about this? Probably not too many, right? But when you open it up, obviously the media and others are going to cover it up. But it's more than that, it's where the stakeholders are the people, the community gets to know, and that there are these things, the resources that are available, but we are bringing all of them under one roof to kind of talk about it. And from there, the elements develop. Things that are already in place, but we can further add to it. So this is just a thought that is in my mind, and I think it's perhaps that gives us center stage as well. We just don't show up at times when there is a problem and address it, but we are actually engaging and bringing these partners and saying, let's continue to talk. So while little things are happening on a regular daily basis and in communities and workshops and engagement, there's a kind of a
I'll react to that. My emotional person says, oh yes, this is wonderful, and I'm starting to envision it already. And then my practical person says, okay, how many commissioners do we have? How much money do we have to work with? Because this will cost a lot of money. I've run conventions before and conferences, and it's an incredible amount of work.
I just had to be corporate sponsored on others, not from the city or the county.
I'm thinking practically about the money, the resources, the personnel.
Maybe a plan.
It's a huge plan, and it's wonderful, and I think it would work in terms of educating people and, in one common place to do all this. People from out of state might come into this conference.
I think it
could be done. It's just a matter of how can we do it on the limited resources and personnel that we have.
I agree that I like the idea. I don't mean to kick it back to you, but maybe this is something you could give us a presentation on in the next meeting or two or three, after you've had some time to really sit through and develop the ideas. One of the things that we would have to be cautious of, and I love your idea of maybe getting outside sponsors to cover the cost, but we also have to make sure that outside sponsors don't hijack the agenda, and then end up having the County of Orange putting its stamp of imprimatur on something that maybe it's not appropriate for a government to be putting a stamp on the press.
Absolutely, and then you have attorneys and other professionals managing that part of it. But
I don't know any lawyers.
I think to just kind of piggyback on Commissioner Reynolds' idea, I was going to suggest that, Ofri, you'd be able to meet with us, commission staff, to kind of hash out maybe some ideas, and it doesn't have to be a grand conference. I mean, at this point, we can do a trial run. I know we've discussed. We discussed in the past doing something on a small scale. We do have our amazing OC Human Relations Council who houses us. They have a partnership with between Brunswick City that have a conference. They have like a minor conference room right across the office. I think you've visited for our crime report event, or we can start something small. We have our ACOM network, who partners that maybe each of them is able to take on a different topic that they can present on, and maybe start that way and see if it's something that kind of can build some steam over time. But we could definitely connect with you to kind of pick your brain on what your idea is, and we can come back with maybe a proposal or some type of presentation for the commission to consider at a later date.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks
idea.
For you.
Is there any other comment? Are there any other comments from the commissioners? No? Do I hear a motion to adjourn our meeting?
Make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? We are adjourned.